As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy!
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds!
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
New Vancast to take you into the weekend, and you go into the weekend coming off a 6-3 Vancouver Canuck victory over the Edmonton Oilers. Tom, I'm a little worried about this because, look, one of the things that we like to do here on the Vancast is we try to have some fun, even through the darkness, and there's been enough of it this season. I kind of feel like the Canucks are cutting us out here, the middlemen. Like, we're the ones that are supposed to bring the joy to the VIPs, but the Canucks had fun last night. You heard it, well, you saw it on the ice, but you heard it post-game as well. Like, a bunch of them, they used that word. They talked about the fact that it was fun. Winning's fun. They haven't done a lot of winning. They did some winning last night in Edmonton.
For much of this season, which has been a, you know, solemn march through a condensed weird schedule with a variety of underlying contextual darkness against the backdrop of a third wave that has hit our country a lot harder than most, especially in North America. Yeah, I mean, the Vancast has been like Tyler Greivik powering forward alone with a series of sublime moves, scoring an unreal highlight. Yesterday's game was awesome. Awesome. And so it was my wife's birthday, JPAT. So I had this weird experience where I didn't watch a single highlight. I hadn't seen a single thing about it. I was off Twitter all night. And then at 4 a.m., my dog woke up, took him outside briefly, and then I watched the game. I watched the game So I'm able to do this podcast having fully watched the game. And it's not just the fact that the Canucks were scoring like crazy. How good were McDavid and Draisaitl last night? Like, they scored the 19. I know this is not what Canucks fans want to hear, and I apologize. But I literally just finished watching the game, and the one thing I'm like jaw dropped about is like they scored the 1987 Canada Cup goal. They scored the Lemieux Gretzky last night, and no one's ever going to think about it or talk about it again, but they scored that. They had the through the legs drop. One time, they scored the Canada Cup goal. How is that not something we have to talk about? Like, they literally did the Gretzky Lemieux from the other side of the ice, of course, as their lefties. Right. But my God,
that was your takeaway at 4 a.m. was that you re-witnessed history.
I saw it and I was just like, "Holy cow! They scored the Canada Cup goal. That's insanity." That was one of my takeaways. Anyway, that was the thing that I like. That like. Propped me up a bit more on my couch at 5:30 in the morning. I was like, ooh, this is good. And I knew they weren't going to come back. So I wasn't like, oh, well, that's, you know, I'm sure most Canucks fans saw that and were like, well, you know, I didn't have that experience. I was just like, wow, what a goal. What a 4-1 goal. That's the best 4-1 goal he'll see in the NHL this year. My goodness. But yeah, I mean, what incredible talents. And then, look, great to see Jack Rathbone have a game like that. That was awesome. And the Highmore line, the Highmore, Hauerluck, Graevac line. I had a guy on Twitter tweet at me this, JPAT. He tweeted at me, let me quickly find it. Hauerluck, Graevac, Highmore. What you got to say about the bottom six now? And it's like, well, I've got to say that this group of six players doubled their points haul for this Canucks team in the 48th game of the season. Like, I don't know what else you want me to say. But look, that line has been bringing it in terms of consistent effort, like much of this Canucks team has. They broke out. They broke out yesterday. And you got to be happy for this Canucks team, especially with how they've worked throughout this losing streak, right? Like, this has not been an effort-driven losing streak. This has not been a team that's at any point folded up their tent. They got rewarded. They deserve to have some of that fun.
Yeah, let's just go right back to the first minute, because Hoglander gets the party started. He gets his 10th of the year, and, you know, I like the shot. Honestly, though, Tom, I thought there was a moment there on that play that kind of signaled that maybe the Oilers thought it was going to be easy after beating the Canucks twice. Like, the defensive play by Jesse Puljujärvi, he does the big swoop there. Like, there isn't much effort in trying to, take away the time or space from Hoglander. It was just the old flyby. And I don't know. Like, I mean, the Oilers are just beating the Canucks twice. They know what the Canucks have been through. It looked to me in the first minute of play like that kind of signaled that maybe the Oilers thought it was going to be another easy night. Maybe it was just Puljujärvi. Yeah. Maybe it was just a flashback to old Puljujärvi. Whatever the case, that was kind of my read on it. But I don't want to take anything, because Hoglander makes a nice move to pull the puck around him and then gets the shot away. And look, the guy's into double digits now in a shortened season. Like, you know, sort of a 20-ish goal pace as a raw rookie at 20 years old. Like, we've talked him up a ton on the pod, but, you know, I'm glad for him. Like, I'm sure there is some real significance to him getting to double digits in his rookie season. And there's still time to go. He can add to that. But that got the ball rolling. And then from there, obviously, you mentioned Rathbone. Like, and I want to couch this properly, because this isn't in any way designed to be a slight on a guy like Jalen Chatfield. But here's Rathbone in his second NHL game. Reads and reacts beautifully. Recognizes that the puck is there, that he can jump up, and then shows finish. And like, we've talked about Chatfield, like, they're different players. But Jalen Chatfield's gone 3 years of professional hockey at two different levels without putting a puck in the net. And here's this guy in Rathbone that, you know, we raved about his debut the other night. Didn't look out of place. Didn't look overwhelmed by the moment. And in his second game, in his fourth period in the National Hockey League, pounces on a loose puck and, you know, shows terrific finish. But I love the anticipation, the read. Tom, the guy's got 3 goals and 10 points in 10 games as a pro. Like, there's something there.
There is something there. Yes. Okay. So let's start with the Hoglander thing, because I had the same takeaway. And here was my takeaway. I watched it and I thought, wow, great move by Hoglander. That was my first. I was like, wow, what a slippery take. Like, what a shot fake to send a guy like that. And then I saw the highlight, right? And it's really it's a nice stop start, right? Like, it's a good move with his feet. But he didn't really have to do anything with his hands. It was just a basic forehand deke. Like, he just sort of had to stop, and that completely threw the Oilers defenders. So that was, you're right. Like, that was not dialed in. Getting ready for the playoffs, Oilers defense.
Attention, let's put it that way. That was details.
Yeah, that Dave Tippett always has his teams play disciplined. That was not that. But it was still, you know, a nice bit of work from Hoglander and a great shot. Rathbone is good. Like, Rathbone is good. And more than that, JPAT, whether it's Chatfield, whether it's Yolevi, right? Right now, the Canucks protect the hell out of their third pair. Like, how many, I bet you Jack Rathbone didn't hit 3 combined minutes against McDavid and Dreisaitl in 2 games, right? Like, the Canucks work hard to make sure that Edler and Hamonic and, you know, sometimes Schmidt-Myers see the top of opponents' rosters, right? Like, they work hard to protect their third pair this season. They have all season long. And that creates a favorable environment for a player like Rathbone, for a player like Chatfield, for a player like Yolevi. And to this point in the season, no one's been able to do anything with that time. This has been a common refrain for me on this podcast. Like, you need to be pushing the river or producing offense or contributing massively on special teams if you're going to play those types of soft minutes at this level. Rathbone clearly has the skill set to do it. The question is, how good can he be defensively? I still think we've seen some moments in the defensive zone in his two games where it's like, okay, there's going to be some work there, right? Like, there's going to need to be a little bit of improvement. But one thing I think the Canucks and, you know, Utica Comet staff too have worked really hard with Rathbone on is sort of quieting his feet. Like, the thing about a guy like Rathbone who can skate all day is sometimes you trust that you can skate all day. You do the old Ed Jovanovsky quick recovery. You know, remember how Ed Jovanovsky just like was so good at making desperation defensive plays, but he always had to be because he'd always made the turnover, yeah. Right? Yeah. Like, yeah. You know, he was an instinctive player. And let's be clear, like, obviously one of the 5 or 10 best defensemen in Canucks history, probably the top 5. So I'm not slighting my good buddy Ed so much as I'm just saying, you know, that's a thing that Rathbone has a tendency to do through these first two games. He's had quiet feet in the neutral zone. I think he's played within himself, and I think he's been applying a lot of what the Canucks want from him away from the puck while also still flashing some of the dynamism up front. Like, it hasn't taken away from what he can do. That's a really good sign in the, you know, outset of his NHL career.
Yeah, and I thought it was really interesting, Travis Green, after the morning skate in Edmonton before the game, was asked about, you know, how do you evaluate young players in the midst of this chaos that is the Canucks season, right? Like, things aren't going the Canucks way, but you're trying to assess and evaluate. And the question was about both Cole Lind and Jack Rathbone. And, you know, a lot of times, like earlier in the week, Travis Green was asked, do you have a plan for Jack Rathbone? And, you know, we've got a plan. We've got a plan for everybody. You know, it was just sort of like he didn't want to tip his hand. I thought it was really instructive yesterday when he said, you know, with a guy like Rathbone, the plan basically is they're going to play him a handful of games in a row here, let him build up a body of work at the NHL level, and then they'll probably sit him down. And that's twofold. One is they've got back-to-back games in Winnipeg, so it wouldn't surprise me if he sits one of those. And I know people are like, just keep playing them. They do want to get Ylevi, and like, they don't want Ylevi to sit for the rest of the season. But also, Travis said, like, you know, we'll build up a body of work that then we can go over with Jack Rathbone, you know, on video, and the coaches can work through it. And I thought, like, that makes some sense to me. Like, he's going to get games in. If he has to sit one or two the rest of the way, you know, it's unfortunate for him, but they've got a few guys that they want to take a look at. But I like the fact that Travis kind of pulled back the curtain a little bit on, you know, how they're going to work with him with 8 games to go here over the remainder of the season.
Well, and so there is real cap ramifications to playing things this way to J-Pat, which we should quickly discuss, which is Ylevi has played 21 games to become eligible for a schedule. He has a Schedule A bonus in his deal, a standard one that all NHL defensemen have, where if he's among the top 3 defensemen on his team by plus minus, having played a sufficient number of games, he earns one of his Schedule A bonuses. Now, that's, you know, 100 or 212 500. Right. So it's like 212.5K, yeah. But it's prorated this season by a factor of 70%. So it's closer to 150K. Nonetheless, that is 150K bonus. Ylevi currently plus 3, basically a lock to hit it, right? Like, unless Nate Schmidt's minus 1 and Travis Hamonic at minus 2 pass Ylevi, like, both would have to, the Canucks will be on the hook for this. Now, because the Canucks are in LTI, that gets applied entirely to next season, right? So it's like a penalty, basically, an overage penalty that will impact the Canucks cap and cost them, you know, just shy of 150K on next year's cap, should Ylevi hit it. In order to hit it, Ylevi needs to play 7 more games. The Canucks have 8 games remaining. So there's real money on the line here. If Jack Rathbone gets into even 2 and the rest of Vancouver's left side D stay healthy, like, there's real money on the line for Canucks ownership and real cap money on the line for the Canucks into next season.
Ah, all right. Well, that's really interesting and certainly something to watch. And there's, I mean, Rathbone's going to play more than
that's,
one.
That's a VanCast special. Where else are you going to hear
that? Terrific. So let me throw this one at you. Do you see any way, and again, Montreal lost and the Canucks win, so the Canucks are not mathematically eliminated with eight to go. It's coming. It's going to happen. It could happen by the weekend here. There will be...
Are they dead? Is their tragic number under two?
It's any combination of 3 points. So the tragic number is really 1.5. But if Montreal had won and the Canucks had only picked up a single point last night, they would have been mathematical. So like the margin for error. It's not happening. We've been saying that for a while. But truly mathematically, when they get to that point and there's a little X beside the Montreal Canadiens and the four are set in the North, do you think there's a chance in any of these remaining games that the Canucks' left side is Hughes, Rathbone, Ylevi?
0%. You can't go to Edler, and you can't go to Edler, who's out of contract after this year, and say, hey, we're sitting you. Edler could come to them and say, hey, I'm tired. I'd like a game. And they'd say, of course, Alex Edler, best Canucks defenseman of all time. Sure, no problem. But you know, unless you sign the guy to an extension, I don't think you can ask him to sit. Not when he's a player with that stature and he's out of contract. No way.
Even in those back-to-backs against Calgary that are going to look and feel just wrong.
Like, well, if Edler comes to them and looks at, gives them the look he gave us on the elevator, right? Like, oh boy. then yes, but it's Edler who has to initiate it. They're not going to go to Edler, nor should they go to Edler. This isn't something I like know. This is just something I know. You know what I'm talking about? Like, I haven't talked to anyone about it. I know how these things work. If Edler wants to play, Edler will play. They will not approach him and ask him not to play. For sure.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
We talk about Edler, and we've kicked Travis Hamonic's topic around as well here on the pod. What a night for him. By the way, the goal, the assist, the fight, getting it all done. For the Vancouver Canucks, and like maybe they were overdue, Tom, but to have three guys score their first goals of the season and another get his second in the same game, I do have to say, and maybe I shouldn't say this, but you think about since COVID, like the Canucks have, maybe they should, like, I'm just saying the odds probably were in their favor that there was going to be a night where they ran into goaltending like that. Because if you think since COVID, they've seen David Rittich twice, Marcus Hogberg three times, and last night was their second look, again, since the COVID break, at Koskinen. Not exactly a murderer's row of NHL goalies.
Koskinen is good.
He wasn't last night.
I like Koskinen. Koskinen is good. I saw some people being like, that contract, oh boy. And it's like, Koskinen's been good. Like, when is anyone... Koskinen has been good. I also feel for him. Okay, so here's the other thing. Like, I knew that the Canucks were going to score 4 goals on 4 shots. I'd seen enough chatter to know that. And then I watched the game, and I felt for Koskinen. Like, that did not look as bad as I expected it to, including the, including the Jace Howerluck goal, which really goes right through him.
Yeah.
And sort of here's my quick sense. First of all, that is a crazy broken play that Hoglander starts the third goal with that excellent move, like just completely shaking Nurse on the wall, right? Just completely shakes him with an excellent power move. I mean, how many inches and combined pounds does Nurse have on Hoglander? He just completely dummies him on the wall. Besser doesn't get everything on a pass, right? So Koskinen pushes way too quickly aside, expecting it to be relatively quick, and then is just sort of overcommitted as the puck glides slowly to Hamonic, rolling gently. He should make that save, don't get me wrong, but that was a weird position to be in. And then the Howerluck goal, I think he expects the shot way faster. Like, he just expects the shot to come, and he, you can see him. He goes down to save it, and then he has to get back up, and he has to go back down again, and then he gets back up, and then the shot comes. And this is because the pass is bouncing into the slot. Hauerluck whiffs on it once, goes down. Then Hauerluck tries to take the shot again, and an Oilers player's stick gets in the way, and Koskinen goes down again, gets up, quick reaction move. And then Hauerluck fights through the stick and then gets it off. And it's just like such a weird play. Like, it's just such a weird timing play. You know, look, he should have had it. I mean, he should have still had that. It went right through his five hole. That's the type of goal that, you know, you give up when it's really not your night. But anyway, I feel for him. Those were not as simple as like bang, bang, bad saves. Or bad plays on the goalie. I don't think you could say he had a real shot. The defending on one was bad. I don't think you can say he had a shot on a real chance on the Hauerluck, on the Rathbone goal. Excuse me. Those last two looked bad, but weren't as bad as they looked for me. I kind of felt for him ultimately. And here's the last thing. I believe that Koskinen is a better option for the Oilers in the playoffs than Mike Smith. So in the event that Koskinen's performance last night dents Edmonton's confidence playing Koskinen over Mike Smith, lets them buy into the, like, Mike Smith's got that playoff swagger narrative, which is complete BS, then it's a possibility that the Canucks will have significantly harmed the Oilers' playoff chances last night.
The VanCast, where you come for your Mikko Koskinen hot takes. I like this.
I just felt for him.
I'll say that. The Hamonic goal, like, he gets a ton of it. Like, you know, it got a Canuck bounce, and Hamonic will take it. But, like, Koskinen gets a big piece of it. It goes up over his shoulder and in the air. And,
I know.
And you're right. I mean, the Hauerluck goal, a little bit of a change up there. But when you've allowed three,
you have to have that one.
Ramp
right.
Up your stick and go five hole. Like, yeah. Dave Tippett's postgame, he was like, first one, not a great defensive play. Second one, bad giveaway. The other two.
he wasn't having it.
No, he wasn't having any of it.
But I actually think the worst goal to allow for a goalie was the Graevac goal. And the Graevac goal was like a marvel of physics. Like, by the time he shoots it, you can see a full slot of white between the goal line,
completely.
Right? The goal line as it
it was fully below the goal line.
Yeah. It was like parallax. It was the parallax goal. And the fact that he was, is like a self face-off win. He wins like 250-50 battles on his way rampaging down that left wing and then scores from an angle that defies physical, like my physical understanding of the game of hockey. Like, incredible. What an incredible play that was. If he'd done that in a game with stakes, that would have been, you know, that would have been like Jeff Cowan level. You know, like, I that would have been a part of Canucks lore. It was so good.
I would love to have heard him say post game, like, yeah, I picked my spot on the back of his helmet plate there. But I'm with you. You mentioned it earlier. Like, you know, if we're giving credit for try, there's been a fair bit of try in that Graevac line lately. Like, Daniel Wagner asked Travis Green about it the other day, where, you know, they didn't score, but they softened the Oilers' defense. The Canucks were able to make a change in one of the home games, and then the Canucks came out, and I think it was the Nate Schmidt goal,
yeah,
if I'm not mistaken, and it was the follow-up shift. But a lot of the groundwork, the dirty work, had been done by that Graevac line, and they don't get credit for it. It doesn't show on the score sheet, and that has been an issue at some point. You want to see some bottom line, but there has been a little bit good, and maybe the bar has been lowered here. Again, if these are the sorts of takeaways that we're getting.
Yeah.
Well, no, I mean, when we're talking about Graevac, though, like,
right.
You know, I don't know that his skating will ever allow him to be anything more than, you know, a depth guy that can fill spots for you. Like, I don't know that he can be a full-time National Hockey Leaguer, but look, these are games that all these guys should be using to put everything they've got forward to try to make an impact. We've been waiting for some of these guys to sort of step forward, and so credit where it's due. Like, I thought it was a good night, and it's been a pretty decent week, all things considered, for Graevac and his line mates.
Yeah, it has. And you know, Highmore signed through next year at $725K. Hauerluck will require a qualifying offer. Graevac will be UFA. But, it, you know, so long as none of those numbers start with nine, I think those are the types of guys who are good to bring back. Just like, you know, so long as none of them are higher than 11 or 12 on your forward depth chart, right? Like that's the key right now. That's the Canucks' third line, right? Like that's the problem. But as organizational depth guys, like I have time for all of those guys. Highmore will be at the right price point. You know, Hauerluck can be pretty easily. He's, you know, not going to have a, I think he will have Arbrights, but it's not like he's scored. So, you know, I don't think he'll have, and there might be more there for me with Hauerluck. Like I do kind of think, I think he's played really safe this year. And then Greyevac, I mean, you know, first captain of the Abbotsford Arrows, like Tyler Greyevac, could be that guy. Clearly this coaching staff anyway has a ton of time for them, although I'm not exactly sure we're betting on them being back at this point. So yeah, I mean, good for them.
Look, look, if we're gonna sit here and praise them, I mean, it has to be pointed out that in one night in Edmonton with Hauerluck and Greyevac scoring, they matched the offensive output. It didn't just double the bottom six's output for the season on the night. They matched the goal-scoring contributions of Antoine Roussel, Jay Beagle, and Louis Erickson this season.
Right.
And obviously, none of those three guys has played a complete year. Two of them are injured, probably not coming back, and Louis is on the taxi squad. But point is, we know how much money is tied up in those three, and in one night, you get contributions from the bottom six that certainly can play the role of those three next year. So, again, for the record, we're just pointing that part out.
12 million, by the way, in case anyone wanted to hear the number. Yeah. I don't think those guys will represent 12 million in cap hit next year, though. Hot take.
Thanks for that.
Hot take. They're gonna over under 2.5 buyouts for the Canucks this summer.
Has to be
under, but it has to be at least two. Let's go 1.5. Over under 1.5.
Oh, I hope it's over. I think Vertanen's a natch, and then take your pick of any of those other guys, right?
Yeah. I wasn't even factoring Jake in. I think has to be over. They have to get rid of multiple guys. and I don't think they can trade them in the flat cap era, so it's time. They have to exercise those buyouts. And this management or this ownership group has been reluctant to do that. As we know, they wouldn't do it last summer when it would have helped, or last offseason when it would have helped. This summer, there's really no option. There's some guys that just absolutely need to be bought out.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's the little birdie? Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms or restrictions apply.
We talk about happiness and guarantees. Well, this week, it's been a guarantee that Brock Besser is going to put the puck in the net three straight games. And Tommy's to 20 on the season, a guy that scored 16 last year, and I know it was tough for him. And he's talked about it at length, and he tried to learn from it and try to bounce back. 20 is a significant number in a shortened season like this one, and there's still 8 games to go. And look, we've seen him. I think he has 4 2-goal games. Like, 25 isn't out of the question. Those Calgary games, who knows what they look like? Who knows what kind of defense he's going to face? Who knows what kind of goaltending, if it's Louis Domingue? All those types of, like, 25's not out of the question. It's a reach, but he's at 20 now, and good on Brock Besser. That's it's turned out to be a pretty good year for him.
He's played exceptionally well, right? And I think he's had a lot of jump this year, too. Like, I don't just think it's the goals. You know, this has been, he's been probably the brightest spot for the Canucks, I think, and I don't think by a little bit, like I think by a fair bit. So, no, good for him, man. I mean, Brock Besser's a hell of a player. You know, I'm not shocked by this by any means. In fact, it's one of the very few predictions that Harmon and I made before the season that looks like it'll pan out. I mean, it's going to be ugly. There's a lot of you know, Quinn Hughes will earn a Norris Trophy nomination. No, but Brock Besser hitting 20 goals. Brock Besser will be a 20 goal scorer again, despite a shortened season, was one of our predictions. At least that one panned out. So, you know, we're 1 for 10. No, we had a couple. Let's go over this. It's funny. Elias Pettersson will finish above point per game for the first time in his career. He's 5 points below, so no, but we didn't anticipate the injury. Hughes will earn a Norris nomination. No. The Besser one, we got that. Schmidt will be one of the 5 most valuable defensemen in Canada. No. But Darnell Nurse will be the best defenseman in Canada is not a prediction I would have made either.
No.
By midseason, Thatcher Demko will take over as the clear 1A by Braden Holtby. We got that one right. Nils Höglander and Olli Olevi are not next in the line of Canucks super rookies. I think we got that right. That's fair to say. Horvat will lead the Canucks in goal scoring. Nope. I think the Pettersson injury actually had a huge impact there, in my opinion. The power play will remain elite despite some regression from PP2. Don't think so.
No.
Vertanen will not score at a 20 goal pace. Nailed it. Yes. And
yes, you did.
And the Canucks will make the playoffs. Ouch.
Ouch. Is that 3? I think that was 3.
Yeah, 3 of 10. That's okay.
I mean, the Höglander one, when you said Höglander and Ulevi, like, super rookie, no. I mean, there was that early hype that he was going to be another rookie of the year finalist. That's not going to happen. Nope. But again, we touched on 10 goals and 24 points as a rookie. Like, nothing wrong.
It's tremendous. Terrific. But that was the point. We were like, these guys could be good, but they're not Hughes and Pettersson. Like, tap the brakes. That was a good prediction, but the rest of them, yeah, no good.
Well, there is one steak that's only available by special request. We call it sirloin a lot. It's the size of a boogie board.
Ooh, I'll have that one. And a drink? Meatballs.
Very good, sir.
I need Besser to be shut down for the rest of the season now, because he's at 20, and that was my number.
Right.
You had him at 21, so his next one, even though I talked about a 25-goal pace, things swing to your side if he scores one more goal. So,
right. Yeah. I need one more, and I'd like him to leave it there.
No, see, I'd vote for him just to shut things down now.
But I really need Horvat. Like, I really need Horvat to get, like, a bunch here.
Yes, you do.
I don't think that's going to happen.
Time's ticking. No, with 8 games to go.
Without that bumper spot, it's just not going to happen. Petey leaving the lineup is very bad for Bo Horvat's goal production, even though they rarely play together 5-on-5. It's weird, but it's true.
No, but it makes sense on the power play. Certainly, the power play has missed Elias Pettersson. And, you know, 8 games to go, they're out on the road, and I know they're in Western Canada. Guys could jump on a plane, I suppose, although still with quarantine rules, they can't fly commercially. So I would have to think that guys that are out of the lineup and aren't on this road trip are essentially done for the season.
Well, okay, so the bonus thing, let's come back to this.
Yeah.
So the bonus thing, Elias Pettersson, who I believe to be getting pretty close at this point, personally. Elias Pettersson is at 26 games, right? So if he plays 2 more games, he'll immediately become eligible for a time on ice bonus. And, like, he'll immediately qualify basically for points per game bonus and a time on ice bonus. Those will happen immediately. Additionally, if he scores 4 goals over the balance of the season, he would qualify for an additional one. And there may be another one that he could get to, but those are the 3 that look to me to be unsettled at this point. So we're talking about, you know, the possibility of $450K in his pocket, $450K cap hit for the Canucks next season. And definitely 300K if he can play 2 more games. So, you know, never count a guy out in these circumstances. Like, never count a guy out from making a surprise return when there's that much money on the line. It's sort of a rule that, you know, I don't think fans and media talk about a lot, but it's true. you know, if he returned Sunday, May 16, Tuesday, May 18, and then he could potentially play May 19, if he's looking at that and he's like, if I can come back and score four goals in those three games, right, then this will have been worth $500K to me almost. I'm not betting against seeing Elias Pettersson again this season. That's my view of it. Sharps bet, Elias Pettersson back May 16. Just reading between the tea leaves, I'd expect him to at least do everything he can and try to make it back for those three.
Well, we heard Travis Green said the other day, like, he's working hard behind the scenes. So that kind of got my ears up, because in my mind, I thought, what's the point? It's a contract year for him. Like, does he want to come back and run the risk of further damage? But what I really thought was, like, if this losing streak had gone from 6 to 8 to 10 to 12, like, nobody wants that on their watch, right? Like, Travis doesn't want that as he's looking for work, whether it's here or elsewhere. And the players don't want to wear that. And I thought, man, like, if this losing streak was to wear on and there was a chance Elias Pettersson could come back, obviously they're way better with him in the lineup. That was kind of my thinking. And then they got their win last night. So, you know, I don't imagine that there's going to be a lot of wins the rest of the way, but I was happy for them that they got out from under the black cloud of losing for a night, and we'll see where it goes. Like, I'm sure the Oilers will be ramped up and looking for revenge.
McDavid's going to go off on Saturday night. Like, McDavid getting to 100 on Saturday night. I know he did.
He goes off every night.
He combined with Dreisaitl for the 87 Canada Cup goal, except with a stretch pass from the goalie to set it up. Like, unbelievable. Yeah, no, McDavid's insane.
So he needs his four.
He's gonna do everything he can.
Four on Monday night. He had four on the road on Monday night.
You're gonna get bounce back McDavid on Saturday night. I think he does it.
He's getting to 100 and then some. It's just a question of when. And you're right, it could come Saturday. There's still another game left against the Canucks. So it could happen against them beyond this one. But no, I mean, that's one of the things certainly that the hockey world's going to be watching on Saturday when the Canucks and the Oilers get back at it one more time.
I can't believe they play again in 8 days in addition to on Saturday. That's insane, man.
Sure, but so is like the Flames are in a week now where they have one game.
I know.
They play Ottawa on Sunday in a game that actually has significance in the standings if the Flames want to finish ahead of Ottawa. I'm sure they do, but it's not playoff implication or anything. We've just talked about the Canucks and this crazy schedule post-COVID. Well, yeah, I mean, it had to be because the Canucks were off for a month, but how does it affect Calgary? Calgary's got one game this week. It's against Ottawa on Sunday. And then most teams are done. The ones that are going to the playoffs are ramping up, but some teams are finished. Flames have to hang around. And then they got four left against the Canucks. Like, what a weird way to finish the season for the Calgary Flames. Well,
and it looks like, so that Saturday, May 15th game against the Edmonton Oilers, that's the date that the playoffs are going to start in the States. So you're going to have a Saturday hockey night where it's like, Zdeno Chara returns to Boston, or the Battle of the I-5, or sorry, not the I-5, the Alligator Alley commences, an all-Florida playoff series. And then in the late game, Canucks Oilers. It means nothing. It's like, oh God. Like, fundamentally, those last four games being played after the playoffs have begun elsewhere. Awful. Like, cruel. Truly cruel. A cruel thing to subject Canucks fans and this team to, in my opinion. Like, these players, this coaching staff, just awful. And will cheapen the product. I think those games are going to be really weird to talk about and cover, JPAT. But, I mean, whatever. Really weird to talk about and cover for most. For us, that's like where we live. Like, bring it on. Hey, can we talk quickly about the draft lottery? I want to talk quickly about the draft lottery.
Sure.
So, the Canucks, usually at this point in the season, right? And I see some of it. I see some of the old... Oh, now is when the Canucks go on a winning streak and ruin their draft lottery odds. I think that's Taj, right? Taj, the leader of Tank Nation. The Canucks are 25th, so they've got a lot of work to do. But 25th by point percentage, so they've got a lot of work to do to really get down into the dregs. Teams like Detroit and New Jersey are only 2 points ahead of them and have two games left. The Canucks have 8 games left. They're going to win a few. So, like, I don't think they're going to get realistically into the bottom five, but they could get close. They will be close. I don't think they'll quite get to the bottom five, though. That's fine. That's fine. It doesn't matter. This year, more than any other year, JPAT, being number one or number two or number six doesn't matter. Because usually, guys have played, and I mean guys, top prospects have played 90 games in their draft eligible season. And when you play 90 games in your first draft eligible season, you have a chance to do like what Tyler Seguin did and cement yourself as one of the best prospects, right? Or what have you. Like, you have a chance to separate. The two or three best players have those 90 games of runway to show that they're one of the best. Like, Owen Power is able to separate from Brant Clark and Luke Hughes, right? This season, that hasn't happened. And granted, like, there's a chance that it would have been vice versa, right? If you'd drafted the Olielewi class, right? This time, in this season, like, if they'd gone through that, like, Patrick Laine probably, I mean, he would have had the World Juniors, so he probably would have still been a strong prospect. But let's go Pierre-Luc Dubois. No chance Pierre-Luc Dubois would have had the runway to jump over Jesse Puljujärvi in that draft class. And there's 0% chance that Jacob Chychrun, who went to the Arizona Coyotes ultimately in like the late teens, would have not been selected in the top five. Like, he would have for sure been a top five pick, right? Things change a lot over the course of a hockey season, especially where a draft class is concerned. This year, that hasn't had it. Like, there just hasn't been a ton of settlement. So, like, we don't know really who, like, there is no consensus number one overall. I mean, I guess it's Owen Power, but it's sort of with a shrug. This year, more than any other year, drafting five versus one doesn't come with the same significant marginal boost in value cost to the team at the top or to the team that wins the draft lottery. This year, more than any other, the Canucks going on a bit of a winning streak here, should they do so, does not harm their long-term sort of, you know, outlook. So Canucks fans, in my view anyway, should be rooting for this to end as painlessly as possible for all involved. Wins are not harmful for this club's long-term prospects, unlike in so many of the other sort of meaningless seasons that Canucks fans have watched over the years.
All right, can I say this? That I've seen a lot of, you know, lose for Hughes, right? Like, there's people that are locked on Luke Hughes. And that's fine. If Luke Hughes is the best player available when the Canucks are up and it's their turn to draft, take him. That's fine. But this idea that you have to have Luke Hughes because you've got Quinn Hughes and somehow, you know, this is going to be magic. Yeah. Like, it's not
they're
Daniel
both
and Henrik.
They're both lefties.
They're not identical twins. They haven't played together throughout their lives. It's not recreating Daniel and Henrik. 99% of the guys that play in the National Hockey League don't get to play with their brothers. And so,
but Quinn will
be just fine.
But JPAT, this is the Canucks. This is the Canucks, right? Like,
I understand. I get that.
What's Jack Capuano's brother's name again?
Dave.
Dave. Jack and Dave. Russ and Jeff. Henrik and Daniel. Like, the Canucks do brothers better than anyone.
And how's that? And how's that worked for them outside of the twins?
Well,
how's that
Russ and Jeff Courtnell.
No, you're right.
Fabulous.
No, you're right. But I'm just saying, in terms of like putting together a Stanley Cup winner.
Oh, well, sure.
You can bring all the brothers you want. I'll take a team that's not related. If it delivers a Stanley Cup here, finally. But I just, this idea that people are going to be upset if the Canucks don't get Luke Hughes. And I'm like, just don't. Like, that's a crazy line of thinking. Again, if he's the best player available when they're on the clock, fine. But if they're reaching just because they want Quinn's brother, like, I think Quinn has shown on his own that he's capable of being a pretty damn special hockey player. And I don't know. Like, you know, I'm not saying Quinn wouldn't want his brother, but that's out of his control. And if they get the brother, like, to me, I don't know that you're getting this boost for Quinn just because they draft his younger brother.
No, but...
So maybe I'm shitting on a good storyline.
Yeah. But also, what does it do in terms of helping you in contract talks? Is there an angle there to be played? And does the marginal value of picking Luke Hughes over, you know, a comparable player come out in the wash if it helps you retain Quinn Hughes long term? Does that move you at all?
I don't know enough about the family dynamic. Like, they seem tight. They seem like all good young guys, but I don't know. Like, to some guys, it would mean a ton to have their brother. I can't say that with certainty that it would impact Quinn, you know, and his on-ice performance.
Yeah.
I just don't know.
Maybe not.
I don't know.
Maybe not. Well, here's the other hot take is that Brant Clark's the guy that fits best because he's a righty.
Sure. Right?
Owen Power and Luke Hughes are both lefties. So does it make sense for the Canucks, considering they've got Rathbone and Hughes and Yolevi, to add a high leverage or like a high value righty to the stable in a guy like Brant Clark? I don't know. My view is just take the best guy. This team needs so much in so many different areas. Just take the best guy. And if it's Luke Hughes, take him. Guys, point per game for the U.S. National Development Team. Granted, it was a weird season. I don't think you can't look into anyone scoring this year. And by the way, I think this is something that the Canucks are aware of, especially with a guy like Gadjevich, right? In looking at his goal scoring, and Gadjevich looks like he'll join this club shortly, like on Sunday, right? Right after the Edmonton game, the team will fly to Winnipeg. He's been lapsing his quarantine there. He'll be with the club. And I bet he'll get in. I think he'll get in. And yet, you know, for all that the goal scoring record looks good, like, this is not your usual AHL. This is the AHL with the 12 best players removed from every game, right? Because they're on taxi squads. Gadjevich has apparently improved his skating. I think the Canucks are pretty excited about the work he's done to identify who he can be as a pro. But you know, restrain your expectations. The goal scoring that we saw from him needs to be taken with a hefty dose of salt.
Yeah, and I wonder, like, you know, do they plug him in on Monday night? Do they let him sit and watch an NHL game in person on Monday and then go Tuesday night? Like, Cole Lynn played after being off for 2 months, so a week quarantine isn't going to be the end of the world for Jonah Gadjevich, but I'm just kind of curious to see how they handle, you know, I guess it depends too, how many healthy bodies do they have by the time they get to Winnipeg. So there are some other circumstances at play here. But yeah, I think we're going to see Jonah Gadjevich make his NHL debut. And it should be pointed out, the minute that Gadjevich steps on the ice, Tom, that's the top five picks for the Vancouver Canucks from that 2017 draft that will have played in the NHL within 4 years of draft day, right? Like Pettersson, Lynn, Gadjevich, Rathbone now, and Mike DiPietro.
Right.
So,
and that's the 2017 class.
17. Yeah.
And this is the other one to note, right? Is like, if you played for the Cape Cod Whalers, which Rathbone did, and his dad was the coach of that team, and Aiden McDonough did, you know, there's a certain former Canucks director of amateur scouting, right? Who's like, his family owns chains of restaurants out in Cape Cod, right? Like, Rathbone's as pure a Judd Brackett pick as you get, right? Like, that is in his backyard. The 2017 draft was sort of the first after the, you know, Canucks consolidated their draft process following 2016, something Trevor Linden wasn't happy with at the time. Does this sort of conveyor belt that we're seeing, and that's continued to churn good value for the Canucks up to 2019. Like, that 2020 draft class, and granted they didn't have a pick in the first or the second round, is looking barren, J-Pat. Like, none of those guys look like probable future NHLers or even guys to write home about in terms of their chances. I do think there still remains a question of what and how effective and how efficient Vancouver's amateur drafting, which was a strength of this organization for a decade or for a half decade, something that's not been true historically, how that looks in the post bracket era. And their first real sort of our first real look at it is going to be this weird, because 2020, I mean, none of those picks were early at all, but the 2021 draft class is going to be one of the most uncertain of all time, with tremendous opportunity and tremendous downside for all teams involved. And the Canucks are sort of an unknown in terms of how confident we should be about their drafting ability as an organization going into it. So that's going to be a fascinating story to watch unfold for me.
Yeah, and we'll certainly devote lots more attention to the draft once the season is done, and we'll cover it off as you would expect, as the VIPs would anticipate we would here at the VanCast. Hey, a Vancouver connection to the full 60 next week here at The Athletic. Former Canuck Eddie Lack is joining Craig Custance. Never know what you're going to get from Eddie, but usually a good time. So you want to have a listen to that. That's Eddie Lack with Craig Custance on the full 60 at The Athletic.
Taco Tuesday on the full 60.
I suppose so. Also, check out our comment section. For every podcast episode that drops, you can do that. Every episode has its own comment section at The Athletic app. We check that out. We listen to the feedback, and I'd love to hear what you have to say about the episodes that we've done. Rate and subscribe to the VanCast on Apple. And if you're not already a subscriber, go to theathletic.com/VanCast. Receive a subscription for just $3.99 a month. And I should mention, too, I saw my renewal came up. I'm a VIP.
Thanks, bud. We appreciate your support.
I guess before we got into the VanCast, I was a subscriber, and I just saw that my renewal was there. So I hadn't thought about that, but I can consider myself a VIP because I'm paying for the content.
Well, we're happy. We're happy to have you.
Good. That means a lot. I appreciate that.
As does
that.
Your support, JPAT.
Yes,
thank you.
And I appreciate my mom and everybody's mom. It's Mother's Day weekend. So
I know.
Get
Make
out
sure
there.
To, yeah.
Yeah.
Go do something safe outside with your mom. Come on.
Yeah, gather around in the backyard. Pop on the VanCast. Big family experience.
Who's from Cape Cod?
How does he like Koskinen? What?
Koskinen's shit. I think his Mike Smith takes bad. He's been really good this year.
All right. I think we know when it's time to say...
Mom!
Time to go. Happy Mother's Day, everybody. For Drancer, it's Jay Pat, as always. Thanks for your support of the VanCast. It means a lot. You can find us here at The Athletic and theathletic.com.
Mom, let's go!
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.